Why are so many dogs suffering from health issues? Actress Katherine Heigl, who's helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, says she's seeing more issues with dogs' joints, odors, and health than ever before. And after doing a ton of research, she feels there's one place we can look to support any dog's health: their food. So she decided to create something she could actually feel good about feeding her dogs. It's called Superfood Complete. Superfood Complete is made with over 30 of the healthiest ingredients on the planet, including several superfoods vital to your dog's health. Badlands Ranch also sponsors the Jason Debus Heigl Foundation, which has helped rescue thousands of dogs and place them in loving homes. Dogs across America are trying this food and experiencing amazing health benefits. Go to badlandsranch.com/save50 and order right now to get up to 50% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. If you want your dog to experience all these incredible things, go to badlandsranch.com/save50 today.
Unlock a new era in podcasting with Unfiltered Studios. Ready to break free from the ordinary? Dive into a world where authenticity meets innovation. Our network isn't just about podcasts. It's a revolution. From nostalgia to movies, sports to self-improvement, find your favorite podcast in an array of diverse shows. Only at Unfiltered Studios. Join the movement. Subscribe to Unfiltered Studios today and join the podcasting revolution. Unfiltered Studios, where every voice finds its place. Visit unfpod.com today to find your favorite show.
Unfiltered Studios will help you press record.
And hello, movie lovers, and welcome to the show. So today I actually have a very special guest. We have an actor named Jake Jensen, and we're going to be talking about his acting career. We're going to talk about calendars. We're talking about a whole bunch of stuff. I cannot wait to dive into this. It's going to be fantastic. It's a pleasure to have him on here for the rest. And so without further ado, let's go on ahead. Let's get on with the show. And hey, Jake, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. Good to be here.
Awesome to have you here. I've been, like I said to you in the studio, I've been looking forward to this all week and all month, basically. So my thing is this. I ended up liking, I love challengers, even though, here's the thing, I'm not a big tennis player or anything like that, but what I do appreciate with a tennis movie and things like that is them explaining rules to us as someone that doesn't follow tennis or anything like that. And that's also why I like the Shia LaBeouf movie. Because of the fact that they were able to actually incorporate people who haven't played tennis and how it got involved with that. So I thought the film for Challengers was really good too. My thing was this. So how did you come about with Challengers and things like that?
In terms of booking the role?
In terms of booking.
You know, I think the fact that I actually played on the Challenger circuit as an athlete. So I understand that world, and I think that really helped me to get the role because I understood what it's like to be out there on the challenger circuit playing. I was a collegiate tennis player, and then I played on the challenger circuit for about a year and a half after college. I think they did a pretty good job depicting that, what it's like out there on the challenger circuit. But I think having that background in tennis then really translated to understanding the role, and then, just on my resume as well, the fact that I was a tennis player, I think helped a lot with casting.
That's good though, man. My question is this though: so did you actually have to coach any of the other actors as far as trying to help them with their roles or anything like that, since you do have a background in tennis or anything?
Well, you know, they had Brad Gilbert, who's a pretty well-known tennis coach, on set that was helping with all the main actors, you know, learn tennis. But I did, it was funny, as I was riding in the van with Josh O'Connor, who plays Patrick Zweig in the film, I did explain to him what a tiebreaker is. And a tiebreaker is the final, you know, scene in the movie where he's playing Mike Faust's character. So it was interesting that I wasn't hired to do that, but I was explaining some of the rules to him as we had like a 30, 45 minute ride from Boston to where we were shooting. So that was kind of fun to get to explain a tiebreak to him.
Pretty cool, though. I mean, that way he actually has some groundwork on what to play with and everything later on in the film, though, too.
Absolutely, yeah.
So my thing is this, too. Like, what got you into acting? And when did you know, hey, look, this is what I want to do? Because I'm always interested in knowing whenever actors get bitten by the acting bug. Because I know that's something that fascinated you, or if that was just something that you're like, look, I want to give this a shot just to see what happens.
You know, I thought about it when I was young, and then I enjoyed acting when I was young, did a few plays, school plays and things, but then I got super into sports and tennis, and that really took over my whole teenage years and through college, where my main identity was an athlete, a tennis player. But I remember I had a professor in college, an English professor, who took me out to lunch when I graduated. And he said, don't answer this out loud, but if you could be anything that you want to be in this world, what would it be? He's like, don't just think it. Don't say it out loud. And actor immediately came into my mind. And I hadn't thought about acting for, you know, 15 years or so. And I was like, I remember thinking, oh my gosh, I can't actually like tell anybody that because I haven't been acting. I haven't done anything for, you know, but it just was something that was in my mind and I kept coming back to it. And finally, when I was about 26, I'm like, if I don't start pursuing it now, it's not that it's ever too late, but if I really want to do this, I need to start acting. And that's really late 20s is when I started taking acting classes and really thinking about seriously pursuing acting. But that seed, I think, had been in there for a long time.
That's, you know what, though? That's something that I can actually relate to because it was something that I always wanted to do as a kid and everything. And you're like, I don't know if I can do this or not. People take me seriously is my thing, though, too. And are people just thinking that I'm just too much up in the clouds of like, you know, okay, you're going to be an actor. This is never going to happen. You need to have some groundwork and everything and have a plan B because here's the thing. If plan A doesn't work out, you need to have a plan B. Did your parents ever encourage you into doing acting? Was that something where it's like, look, I like what you're wanting to do, but you need to have a plan B. You need to do a trade and then back to doing acting. Because my mom, like that, where it's like, you know what, you need to have a plan B, but I want to do plan A. If I wanted plan B, I would go with plan B first. And it'd be my plan.
Yeah. Well, I was actually in grad school pursuing a PhD in sports psychology, and I suggested to my parents that I drop out and pursue acting, and you would have thought that the world was ending. So I kind of anticipated that, but I was just testing the waters to see what they would say, especially my dad. I mean, you would have thought I just, fireworks went off. So, but I ultimately decided to stick it out and finish my degree, which I'm actually really glad I did. It's ultimately given me some financial stability that has allowed me to pursue acting and not be worried about where am I going to, you know, pay my rent every month. So actually, I'm glad that happened. And my mom's always been very supportive, even since then. But my dad still is not exactly. He's like, I don't understand why you can't just focus on your sports psychology career. Why you still have to do that acting thing? And I'm like, Dad, you just don't get it. But it's good. He's coming around slowly.
That's a good thing, though. That's a good thing that he's starting to be more supportive and things like that. You have the support of your family as well, because it's hard to actually, I can imagine as a parent, it would be hard. Like, you want the best for your child and everything. And they're wondering, okay, is he going to just be successful? Is this going to be big? He needs to actually have something to actually support support himself with aside from that, because it is hard out there to be able to do acting.
Yeah.
Like that too, because there's a million actors out there that are waiting tables doing stuff. At least if you have a plan B, you'll be able to support yourself while also trying to balance the acting life too, which I think also helps out. So my question is this though too, like, so your degree is psychology for sports? I'm just wondering.
Yeah, my degrees, my master's and my PhD are actually in sports psychology. It's a division of psychology now that's recognized as its own kind of subfield within psychology, and it's really growing. I mean, the number of Olympic athletes, as I'm watching the Olympics right now in Paris, the number of athletes that are working with sports psychologists is just exploded over the last, 10, 15 years. I think it's a really important part of pretty much every professional or Olympic level type of athletics team or even individual athletes. So honestly, I think it's helped me as an actor too, just being resilient, knowing how to manage stress and anxiety, handling pressure situations. I think all of that training as an athlete and then as a sports psychologist has helped me definitely as an actor as well.
That's fantastic, though. And you're not lying, though, when it comes down to the Olympics and things like that, too, because mental health is actually the thing that I believe in, though, too. And I remember a couple of years back where you actually had an athlete that had to leave because of the fact with her mental illness. And she's like, look, I need to go. I can't do this. This is overwhelming. And I think having an on-the-field sense of having a psychologist there helped them as they're going into their career of being an athlete for the Olympics is a great thing. You don't see that anymore. You don't see anything like that.
Yeah, and you even look at somebody like Simone Biles. I mean, she's the GOAT of gymnastics, and she was not immune to having, she got the twisties in the last Olympics, and, a lot of athletes would have ended their career. But, if it can happen to her, it can happen to anyone where that the pressure just becomes so great, so much that you can't really perform the way that you want to be able to perform out there on the field or in the arena. So it's amazing to me to see her now come back and perform at such a high level. But I think the nice thing is that even if she hadn't done that, there's now more open discussion about it's okay to take a step away sometimes. It's okay to acknowledge that, hey, I'm struggling mentally, and that's okay. And I need some time. I need to take a break. I need to step away. And so it's just nice to see a lot more open dialogue, I think, now about mental health and mental training and all the related aspects of that.
Same here as well, because I remember a long time ago where mental health, psychology and stuff like that was very closed off. You had people that wouldn't even listen and then being very closed-minded, like, oh, they don't need no psychology. Look at how great they're doing.
Yeah.
Like, are they, though? I mean, I said, just because you see the person in front of you, you don't know what's going on in the inside but they're struggling with.
Absolutely.
As I said, you're judging a book by its cover before you don't know this person. You're just seeing them on TV. You don't know what they're struggling with. And I think that more people actually are more receptive to psychology now than ever before. And I actually did a review for Good Will Hunting recently. And it just amazes me how many doors that film actually opened up for psychology. And also inspired other people to be psychologists, though, too. Be able to help people. And I can tell just by talking to you, you just have that kind-hearted vibe about you to where you just want to help somebody, help them with their struggles and be there. But I think that's a fantastic thing to have for the Olympics and for sports.
Yeah, and I think, I didn't mean to interrupt you, but I think it applies to acting world as well. I think sometimes we assume, well, these actors, once you book a big role or once you win an Oscar or an Emmy, that everything's great. And those are great things to accomplish, but that doesn't mean that you still can't be struggling with the things outside of acting or even just the pressure of expectations and now, being in the media and social media and all of the pressures that come with that. I I think it's really important that no matter where people are at in their careers, that doesn't mean they're immune to mental health struggles and
exactly.
Absolutely.
I want to talk about this a little bit more, but you know, it's like, okay, you did this film, you won the Academy Award for it. What's next? And you're over analyzing over and the anxiety of it. I was like, can I top this? And then after that, it becomes another struggle on top of it. Top of that, a good example that I'm going to use is the rock band Kitty. One of the, not the vocalist, but one of the guitar players. They became popular back in the early 2000s. And it got so overwhelming for her that she had to leave the band because she was not used to having fans this quickly. They thought it would be a slow process. And sometimes it is, sometimes it isn't. It just depends on the thing. But that can be the same thing said for acting as well, of the fact, you never know how successful a film could be. You never know that the anxiety, and the next thing you know it, you are on the Academy Award panel, but probably maybe won an Academy Award, and then therefore now everybody's asking those questions. What are you going to do next now that you are nominated? Can you top this film? And you know, it's hard to actually balance that struggle of that. And I think psychology, I think that it's a great thing to actually have, and to have somebody there for you.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. Job interviews are one of the most pressure situations that people face. I mean, the research shows that job interviews cause levels of anxiety that equal a lot of other, you know, major stressful events in life. Actors are having to basically interview all the time. Every audition is, in a sense, an interview, and you're only going to book most people, you know, one out of how many? 20, 30.
Right.
And so I have a huge respect for actors and the resiliency it takes to constantly be searching for work. You know, I mean, even well-known actors, they're not working all the time. I mean, very few are. And I guess in a sense, athletes as well, you know, it's, you know, you're basically constantly having to prove yourself to stay on a team, to make the next Olympics or the next championship. And it's, I have a lot of respect for those performing artists as well as athletes, and just the stress and the resiliency it takes to put yourself out there over and over again.
So my other thing though too is, I know something that I was wanted to ask you though too. So what would you say is your favorite genre to act in? Is it comedy? Is it comedy? Is it act? Or you're just like a mixed bag. It's like, I like anything. I'll put in 110%.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I've done more dramatic roles, but I feel like I'm still at a point in my career where I'm exploring and open to a lot of different genres. You know, it's interesting. Even when I shot my 30 takes of a couple scenes in Challenger, Luca, the director, was like, "You're really funny. You should do more comedy." And I thought, "Well, that's interesting, because there wasn't that much to base that off of." But he's like, "You're really funny." So, comedy is definitely something I'd like to pursue more. I just for whatever reasons, drama has been more when I go out for more dramatic roles. But certainly, I think exploring and doing more comedic roles could be a lot of fun.
I think so too. I think that, you know, drama can actually open the doors up for a lot of things as well. And you also have to have your mindset into the character's mindset and try to open doors from probably some stuff in your past and put that into the character's perspective. Doing it. A comedy would you say is more complex because of the fact that you're trying to find a range of emotion versus doing a drama? Basically, well, I can relate to this character easily. I can be able to know what this character needs versus a comedy, because comedy is the most subjective, most hardest thing to get, even as an actor, because everybody's humor is different. So it's like, okay, am I trying too hard? Am I reaching too hard? Am I overselling this? What am I doing wrong?
Yeah. And I think the timing of comedy, you know, that's, I feel like drama, you're rewarded for taking sometimes more time and slowing the pace down. Whereas comedy, it's quick and it's fast. And I think for the people like me that overthink things, that I get rushed and the timing's hard to get. So I have a lot of respect for comedic actors. And obviously there's all different types of comedy as well, but I think the timing for me is the biggest challenge is just getting that timing.
I can definitely see that because you also have to have balance with the other co-star that you're with and trying to bounce off of them and try to get the vibe that they're going for. And if your timing is slow paced, in a sense, you could lose the audience or you could lose the actor that's playing the character as well. So I can definitely see that. Now, what would you say was the most challenging thing for you as far as auditioning for a role?
That's a great question. Before COVID, it was absolutely going in the room and not letting all the distractions get to me. You know, when you went in to the room, there was especially for a callback or a chemistry read, there would often be a whole panel of individuals there judging, making decisions about whether you booked the role or not. So you'd have the camera on you, you'd have the casting director, but then you'd have some nice producers, director, and not letting that, just using that energy of the room, but not having it distract from you're there to play that role. Honestly, since COVID, for the most part, auditions have all become self-tape, at least the first round of auditions. And that's a whole different challenge of how can I connect to the audience only through what I'm doing on camera, which in some ways is more what we have to do as actors anyway, but then we don't have the benefit of actually being in the room and getting to meet people and making those connections. So I think for me, it shifted from, I was finally starting to really feel comfortable in the room. And now I'm still figuring out, well, how can I make an impression, build relationships with casting directors and things when I'm not going in the room? So it's been, it's weird. I felt like I was finally getting that momentum. Like, I really enjoy being in the room now with casting and with producers and things. And then it went one day, literally I auditioned for King Richard. And a couple weeks later, I'm, you know, at my parents' house and stuck with them for, no, I don't mean, I, it was a privilege
to spend
time with them, but we're in, you know, lockdown for COVID. So I think that's been an interesting, the momentum of my acting career has been interesting.
Oh, reverse.
Going, because there's been so many of these interruptions with COVID, and then we had the strike last year. And so it's been an interesting, the last, you know, three, 4 years have been an interesting time to be an actor.
Right. I definitely agree with you on that. And I know that it can be intimidating inside as well, inside those audition rooms as well. Then trying to get in the mindset of the character, then also to making sure that you're doing your job and also not trying to overanalyze what they're trying to do. And then finally, you get the momentum, you get what you're trying to do. And then all of a sudden, life changes. Things change, and now you're stuck sending in videotapes.
Yeah.
Stuff like that. And they don't, I feel like this. I love the audition tapes and stuff, things like that, but I don't feel like they get you as a personality, as someone that's trying to become a character, because then it just feels, I don't know, if I'm overanalyzing this, or is this baseball? But does it seem like, okay, well, this guy is just sending a tape and that's it? There's no structure to him because of the fact that he's just on tape. Guide him the way we need to because he's not in the audition room where we can try and get him to redo this again. Because it's either you send in the tape, they love it, and that's it, or they go on ahead and then they're on to the next one. What about that first tape? Am I wrong about that, or am I right about
no,
that?
No, I think you've got it. I think you got it. Just you nailed it. You know, and I think now, even though, you know, we are booked on the job we do is getting into that character and portraying that character, they still are making choices, at least when you go in the room, of, is this somebody that I also would want to work with, or that I see would be somebody that the director the production would enjoy having on set. And I think, you know, certain people give off a certain energy and vibe that, oh, this is the kind of person that we like their audition, but we also like them as a person. And there's somebody we'd really want to, you know, work with for multiple weeks or multiple months. And I feel like the self-tape kind of took that part out of it. So yeah, maybe it's more focused just on our acting, which can be good or bad, but it takes away that, hey, this is somebody that I really energetically am connecting with as well. And I feel like that's what we lost a little bit, which I feel is unfortunate, especially for those of us really, you know, trying to make, get a foot in the door and book bigger, you know, more and more, bigger and bigger roles.
And just make more contacts with them and things like that. You want that human interaction. It's hard to do that on a videotape as well. And also, too, I think that your anxiety would be even more threatening with it being on a videotape versus being inside the same room with them. That's,
yeah.
Because I'll be like, well, am I stammering through this? Am I not good enough? And is my tape good enough? What did I do wrong? What am I going to do? Can I sleep tonight knowing that I sent this off? Is it trash? Do they think of, and then I could just imagine the anxiety that you're having to carry with the videotape versus inside the audition room, even though there is some anxiety in there, but at least you know a little bit of a nod from them. Or at least,
yeah.
You know what, that's a great performance, Jake. You did great. We'll call you and you walk out and like, okay, maybe I nailed this. Maybe I didn't. But at least I know I got a good job. Audition tapes, I don't know if they actually say, well, you did a great job or not, but I know that my anxiety would be all of it.
Well, you usually don't get any feedback at all, which honestly I miss having, because it was actually nice to get casting directors giving some redirects, you know, when you go in the room, hey, let's try it. That was a good take, but let's try it this way. Now, for the most part, you just have to make those choices yourself, and you can totally get in your head about it. I used to like do 20, 25, 30 takes on self-tapes. I've gotten much better. Now it's like, okay, three or four, and usually the second, third one's the best one, and then they get worse after that. So it's just like, let's just send it in, and that's what I have to do. But I know a few years ago, I was, you know, 30 takes, and I remember my mom was reading with me on a few, and she's finally like, that's it. I'm not reading with you one more. So I was like, okay, Mom, I'm sorry. I'll limit it to like five takes. That's it.
So. I'm pretty much the same way with the podcast though, too. I'm like, okay, this is my 10th take already. I can't do any more. My voice is gone.
Yeah.
Because one time I actually did one where I'm like, I forgot my name. I'm like, my name is shit. So I had to go back and redo it. So I definitely understand the anxiety of something, and no, I'm wondering too if like, am I gonna crush this or am I not gonna crush it? And I'm also an overthinker, just like you are. I'm like overanalyzing, putting too much pressure on myself. Is there ever a time where it's like, you know what? Am I putting too much pressure on myself, or am I just overanalyzation?
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, that's just how that's how I was actually thinking. But you know, another thing I wanted to ask you was this. So when you audition and everything, is there any other challenge that as well when you're in
the room? You faded out on the last part of your question. Can you repeat that?
Yeah, not a problem. I was just asking if like there was like any other challenge that you faced inside the audition room that you
You know, I think I didn't have a lot of experience with these, but chemistry reads are a challenge because you're then suddenly not only acting with, you know, normally the first rounds are with a reader that is not really giving you much. They're kind of almost a blank slate. They're reading the words, but it's really up to you to create. Then in a chemistry read, you're acting suddenly with another actor. And that's exciting in a lot of ways, but it also it throws a whole nother level of pressure out there. Because then it's like they're seeing if the chemistry is there between the actors. And, you know, I think that's something that there's no way to fully prepare for until you the more that you have chemistry reads, the better you get at doing that. I think for me, it was just looking at those more as a exciting opportunity and a challenge rather than being threatened by that. Oh my gosh, who am I going to be matched up with? Who am I going to be reading with? And you know, a lot of that just comes from the more I think you're in that situation, the more comfortable you get with it. But there's nothing that really fully prepares you for that until you're there in the room with another actor that's also either sometimes they've already booked the role, but a lot of times they're still making casting choices of which actors work best together. And that's another level of, I think, challenge. I've done one chemistry read on Zoom. That was horribly awkward. So I'd rather be in the room than do it on Zoom.
Right, exactly. Because Zoom calls, I mean, you go into technical difficulties. There's a delay. There's also, it's like very off balance about talking in Zoom.
Yeah.
And I know my stuff is virtual and everything too, but there's just something about Zoom whenever it comes down to auditions, it comes very wonky.
Yeah.
I don't know if the chemistry is good. I don't know if the chemistry is bad. And, you know, it could land to the point where both of y'all don't get the part because of the fact of how wonky it is. And it's neither one fault. That's one thing that I have to say is what's bad about COVID was the fact that everything was virtual. Nothing was in person. Nothing was personal. And I like that human interaction. I don't actually talk to the person in front of me. Mr. Hey, how are you doing, man? But yeah, I just want to say, I like the human interaction. I think that's something that we're missing in today's world. Everything is so high tech and technology. Missing relationships in today's world. And that's how I am. I just love the human interaction. Well, for you.
Yeah, so do I. And I think that's, I was making the point earlier. I really actually miss going into rooms, meeting people. I find, you know, my basic personality, I'm an introvert, so I sometimes get overwhelmed with huge groups of people, but I do really appreciate the interaction with, you know, like I love the one-on-one or a couple of people. And I think we need that as human beings, but I think we also need that in whatever industry, whether it's podcast, radio, acting. I think that's something that we're not fully back yet, you know, from the COVID, you know, era. And I hope we get more back to where it used to be.
Same here as well, because I think that we actually, it's important to have those relationships. You can't really have those relationships. I'm also an introvert as well. Like, I get claustrophobic at work at Christmas parties and stuff like that. And my boss is like, you know, we have to do this. I'm like, it's like, she goes, yes, we do. I'm like, okay. So I'll go on ahead, fix my to-go box, and after that, I'm leaving. Office. They see me. They know who I am. But that's who I used to be. But now with podcasting, I feel like podcasting has opened the point where it helped me with my own mental health. Yes, I do lock up whenever I'm around a bunch of people. Yeah. That's just how I feel, though. I feel like podcasting.
Now you can shut up.
But, let's see here. Okay, so thank you for telling me. I think I know what might be the problem with the mic issue.
Okay. Yeah, sorry. A few times it's gone out a little bit. For the most part, I've been hearing you fine. I thought it was maybe just my end, so I'm sorry. I should have maybe said something earlier.
No. It's perfectly fine. I think it's fixed. Can you hear me okay now?
Yeah, I can hear you. If it happens again, I'll let you know.
Yeah, just let me know, because sometimes it wants to dip in and dip out. It depends on how things are. You have to love updates for stuff. Okay, now it's perfect. Yeah, it's just because my mic was a little low. So my other thing that I think that I really wanted to dive into was this. I know that you're a huge tennis player. Is there any sports that you love outside of tennis?
Well, Yes, not necessarily to play as a competitor, but I'm a big fan of sports in general. I work as a sports psychologist, so I work with athletes from all different teams. So I've become a pretty big fan of a variety of sports. Volleyball, beach volleyball, I love to watch. I'm huge into the Olympics. I've been watching the swimming. I have a twin sister. She was a collegiate swimmer, so I enjoy watching swimming. I would say probably my favorite spectator sports are definitely volleyball, beach volleyball. I love to watch gymnastics. I was watching today at the Olympics. That's, you know, I watch a lot. I grew up in Utah, so Utah Jazz. I was a big Jazz fan. I enjoy watching the NBA. I'm not very good at any other sports, though. Unfortunately, tennis is pretty much where my skills are. But I do enjoy following and watching, you know, quite a lot. Yeah, a lot of sports.
I'm actually the same way, though, too. I grew up in Boston. I'm a Celtics fan. Grew up in Michael Jordan as well. He was always the GOAT in the 90s, and that's actually my go-to back in the 90s as far as that goes. And also, too, you can with Boston Celtics team in the 90s, too. Larry Bird.
Yeah.
Let's see here. We actually have the Olympics has been funny. Says swimming causes it crazy. They swim in them rookie waters. Okay.
I don't know if he's talking about the Seine River is where they're doing the open water swim. Mm-hmm. And I guess they spent millions of dollars to clean it up. But then with all the rain they've been having, the bacteria levels are not safe now. So they're not even sure they're going to be able to use the river. So I hope they're doing, I think the triathlon swim is there and then an open water swim. I think the pool, indoor pool where they're doing the other swimming events is fine. Other than I heard it's more shallow than a lot of the pools they're used to swimming in. So there's always something, you know, with every Olympics, there's going to be differences in the facilities and athletes have to adapt to that.
Exactly. And that's something I actually looked at today when I was took a little bit of a peek today at the Olympics because we had it on the ER. So I work at a hospital. And I noticed that the swimming pool is a lot different in Paris than it is in the U.S. So I'm like, that's a challenge in its own self with trying to adapt into the way things are run overseas because the way compared to the U.S. So I think that's actually really fascinating about how each country does their things differently.
Yeah, you know, I just was in Europe for a few weeks and I love Europe, but there's still just, you know, little things that are different just culturally. And I think for some of these athletes too, we assume, you know, that they've traveled the world as an athlete, but that's not always the case. Some of these athletes are pretty young and they really haven't competed much outside of, you know, their own countries or their own kind of part of the world. So I think that's one of the challenges of the Olympics is it's, you know, it's in a different location, different part of the world every 4 years. And that, every venue, every place is, it brings its own culture and that's a great thing, but it also can be a challenge for athletes.
I imagine so, because you have to readapt into the way that they usually do things in the U.S. and then now they're having to do something totally different overseas and try to learn how they do things. It's definitely a challenge in its own self.
Well, even the Olympic Village in Paris doesn't have AC, and you're sitting there going, that's a, you know, especially for Americans, we're used to having AC, and I know a lot of Europeans homes and things don't. So even something as simple as that can be a big difference for somebody who's used to being cool inside rather than sweaty all the time.
Right. Because that's one thing that I can say, though, is that we're blessed to be able to be in a country to where we're not sweating all over the place or anything. Let's see here. I like the NBA players. Okay, that's really, changing a lot of them refiles the basketball rules.
I'm not sure what that was referring to be honest.
Me either. But if you can elaborate and everything, we'll be able to go ahead and try to answer that question or that statement and that'd be great. Yeah, man. I just love how passionate you are about about sports, about acting, and things like that. That's one of the things that I really wanted to get to know you better on, and everything too. Was like, you know, which one? I know that if you could do both, you would. But which one do you feel like that you're focused more on and dialed in on more?
You know, it really goes. It goes up and down. I think it's hard to be 100% equally focused on both at the same time. So there's definitely times where I put more energy into my sports psychology career, and then there's other times where I definitely energetically put more into my acting. And for the most part, I feel like it kind of balances out. And I think, honestly, it's helped me stay excited and I think the balance and kind of shifting a little bit between the two has allowed me to stay very, very passionate and very motivated, because I don't burn out of either one. Some of that's just dictated by schedule. For example, I work at a university, so I'm off during the summer. So that's a great time for me to energetically put more into acting. And then there's, you know, other times where I have to put a little bit more into whether I'm teaching sports psychology or working with certain athletes and teams. But I never fully drop one or the other. There is always a certain level of balance. But just definitely energetically, there's certain times where the focus is more on one than the other. And for me, it works.
I feel like you need to have that. You can't just be focused on both. You have to have that switch on and off both at the simultaneously in order for it to work and have that balance. So I totally understand that. Let's see here. So this is what Mr. Rodriguez says. NBA players got to adapt to the FIBA rules, which instead of what they're used to in the NBA, basically. So it's about adjusting to the rules to according to how they have.
Yeah, and I wish off the top of my head, I'm not sure the major differences between the rules that they're using in the Olympics, for example, and what the NBA is. But I think Olympics are definitely governed by different organizations, so they're going to have their own set of rules and regulations. And that's probably one reason why certain athletes excel at the Olympics, but why some struggle, because it is different from often what their league or their national organization is using. And, you know, I think that's part of being an athlete, is just that developing that flexibility, a little bit like an actor. You have to be able to work with different directors, different production companies and adjust to that. But I definitely now after this, I'm going to go look up the differences in the rules.
I'm kind of interested now as myself, as well, so I might actually do that, because I'm interested in knowing what the difference is between the NBA and how the FBIA is as far as their rules and regulations go as well, because I know that's two different things and totally. My other thing though too is, now if you could would you ever do, which one would you want to do, producing, directing, or acting?
I have done a little bit of producing. I actually have a feature film that I'm an executive producer on that hopefully will be coming out this fall. Feature film, but low budget. I think being a producer with a big budget is a totally different experience than being a producer with a low budget. But I have a lot of respect for producing and just, you know, managing so many different actors and cast and crew and locations and everything that goes into that. I think it's challenging. I was actually pretty good at it, because I think my sports psych and my organizational skills allowed me to be a pretty good producer. So I could see myself doing that more down the road, but I would definitely want to have a little bit bigger of a budget to be working with than I did for this last film that I was working on. Directing's never been something that's really been something that I thought about doing. I never say never. Right now, definitely acting is of those three is what I'm would be most interested in continuing to do and pursue. But I there's a lot of projects that I have ideas for, and I think being a producer on some of those would be very exciting.
See, I think that's actually very fascinating, because I know for me, a creative brain that I have, I can never shut it off. So I could just imagine all the ideas that you have in your head just flowing through and stuff like that. Is like, I want to do this. I'm an actor, but I also want to produce. I want to direct. I want to do all these other things and see where it gets me. Because I believe that you're very talented at what you do. I know that you're passionate about what you do. But I just really love your passion for your psychology. I love your passion for your acting and stuff like that, man. I commend you tremendously for everything that you've been doing.
Well, I appreciate that. And I would love to produce actually a television series about a sports psychologist, because I think there's so many storylines there. I mean, I just based off of the athletes that I work with, I mean, some of the stuff that they're dealing with that comes up in sessions. I mean, I have endless storylines for you know, episodes that I could have. And then you've got the dynamics with coaches and, you know, organizations, whether it's university, collegiate sports or professional. And I just think, you know, we have all these medical dramas and law and LA, you know, and NCIS. But I think there's been some shows that have had sports psychologists in them, but I think a whole series on that and really kind of getting an insight into what that's like, I think there's a lot of potential there. So I would love to produce and act in something like that and use all my knowledge of sports psych.
You know what, though? I never thought that I would think that Max would actually pick that up, because it seems like something I could just picture it being like a Max TV show.
Yeah.
Kind of style, like a Sopranos meets sports psychology kind of thing.
Absolutely. I mean, you've got assistant, you've got coaches sleeping with athletes. You've got athletes running off with each other. You've got, I mean, there's just so many storylines, and I think you could definitely I could see it on like an HBO Max. Absolutely.
I can too. Like, I can picture the psychologist, I can picture the coach coming in, be like, hey, look, I slept with my athlete. Well, dude, that's not good, but let's talk about it.
And everything's confidential, so unless they're imminently going to harm themselves or somebody else, I don't everything stays in the room. But sometimes I'm just like, I just go, really? Am I really hearing what's happening and going on?
But another thing, though, too, is you can even go as far as, like, even the therapist needs a therapist.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And go into the psychology of the psychologist and be like, hey, look, I had something that was off the wall with one of my patients. I need to talk about it and stuff like that. So you can even go into that realm, though, too. Just like how Dr. Melfi had to go see the psychiatrist because of the stuff that Tony was doing, you can do the same thing with the sports psychology. I can see being played out in my head right now.
Yeah.
And I'm eating it up.
Well, and then, you know, I had one client that ended up stalking me. And I mean, to the point where she like cut herself and put bloody handprints on my door and said, we're going to be connected forever. And I mean, I have some stories that would make great TV.
That does sound like a drama, though. That definitely does sound like a drama, suspense, drama kind of flavor to it for a season. Yeah. You know, have that for like episode 3, season 1.
Hook the viewer in, right?
Exactly. But man, it was a pleasure talking to you tonight. This has been really a great treat for me. I've been looking forward to this all month. I'm actually happy that you came on here. I want to have you back on here again. Well, seriously.
I would love to be back, and let's do it.
All right. Sounds great, man. But yeah, that's going to be it as far as this interview goes. It was a pleasure a pleasure to actually have you here. Is there any kind of social medias or anything that you want to actually pitch out there for people to follow you at and everything? All the links will be in the description, but is there anything that you wanted to really grasp on the audience for?
Well, my social media handle for TikTok, Instagram, and X, I guess, former Twitter, is Jake Jensen Media. So that's it's the same handle for all of my social media. So that's the best way to connect. And Instagram's probably the social media I use the most, but I'm trying to expand and use all three. So
that's how I am. I'm like jumping all over social medias right now. Like I'll go on ahead, do promos on Instagram, then on Threads, and then on TikTok. I just wish it was all in one thing where you can just send it to every single social media.
I know.
That'd be so much easier.
Yes.
But anyways, but that's going to be it as far as tonight's show goes. But I just dropped my Deadpool and Wolverine review. You can also check that on the audio and video podcast. So that's going to be it as far as the show goes. Please stay back and earthy so I can properly exit you out of the studio and everything too, and talk to you one last time, and we'll close out.
This country was built on a distinctly American work ethic. But today, work is in trouble. We've outsourced most of our manufacturing to other countries, sending away good jobs and diminishing our capability to make things. American Giant is pushing back against that tide. They make the kind of high-quality clothing staples you need for a comfortable, stylish, and active summer wardrobe. Like vintage-style tees, tough tank tops, breathable polos, lightweight sweatshirts, shorts, and so much more. All made right here in the USA, from growing the cotton to adding the final touches. So when you buy American Giant, you create jobs for seamsters, cutters, and factory workers in towns and cities across the United States. And it's about more than an income. Jobs bring pride, purpose. They stitch people together. Support America's workers and get 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with promo code STAPLE20. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com, code STAPLE20.